Good morning. It is time to get up with college football. And huge reaction to a phone call that left everyone pointing in one direction. You'll hear what that is right off the top. Then, baseball's players are taking a public stand that could threaten the chances of a season. Are they right? Or is it the biggest mistake they've ever made? And there is only one way Tom Brady can make his Tampa time truly memorable. The question is, can he get it done before it's too late? We'll answer those and all the other questions as we get up with you on a Friday from Bristol. Mike Greenberg here, Scott Van Pelt. Thank you very much, and thank you all for getting up with us here on ESPN. We have a very busy morning leading into a weekend that is actually filled with live sports. Boy, does that sound awfully good. But we start with Get Up and Go here and take you through some of the notes from late yesterday. NBA players will receive their first salary reduction today, with more than $30 million being withheld from player paychecks. However, five of the league's top 10 earners, including LeBron James, have already been paid in full, so they will see the reductions come out of their salaries next year. NASCAR now has 20 races on the schedule after announcing June events in Tennessee, Georgia, Virginia, Florida, and Alabama. The Cup Series is scheduled to resume this Sunday at Darlington Raceway in South Carolina. Meanwhile, University of Florida AD Scott Strickland says the school is open to hosting events for professional teams that are looking for a way to play during the pandemic. Florida opened the state for pro sports on Wednesday, so that is certainly something to keep an eye on. Meanwhile, SEC presidents and chancellors are set to vote next Friday on whether to allow their schools to open athletic facilities in June for voluntary workouts. All athletic activities are currently suspended due to the pandemic. And that brings us to this. The Power Five commissioners recently held a conference call with NFL commish Roger Goodell in order to glean some insight from the league on how to handle the pandemic. Here's ACC Commissioner John Swofford on the current state of the college football season.
I would emphasize that we are going into this year with the anticipation of playing at this point in time. Most all of our institutions are indicating that they intend to open in various fashions as we go into the fall. But there's a lot to that. That can happen in between now and then.
Yes, there certainly is, and let's get into it early this morning, guys, as we say good morning to Paul Feinbaum, Laura Rutledge, and Bobby Carpenter. And Laura, we'll start with you, because I saw in your notes that there seemed to be sort of a universal feeling coming out of that phone call. What was it?
Yeah, it's universal optimism that there will be college football in the fall, Greeny. And this continues to change, but I think that's really important. Coming off of that call with Roger Goodell, it serves as more of a roadmap of trying to say, okay, what we are doing right now, the steps that college football is taking to try and have a season that either starts on time or shortly thereafter, that's what the NFL is doing. And they're in lockstep with a lot of the same things. Obviously, the challenges are different between college football and what the NFL has at their fingertips. But either way, they felt, these Power Five commissioners, a lot stronger about their ability to go forward the way that they're planning to and the way that we're starting to see these steps being taken by the commissioner Roger Goodell's encouragement and by finding out just a little bit more information of how the NFL is going about their business. So overall, lots of optimism for football in the fall coming from that call.
Now, Paul Feinbaum, what do you think college football can learn from the NFL?
Well, to have a continued straight message, Greeny, college football has been literally all over the place, like a fish out of water for the last 2 months. They get on conference calls and talk about how they're Zoom meeting each other to death as if that's accomplishing anything. Roger Goodell never deviated. He said, we're going to have the draft in late April. We'll have the season. The schedule was released. But because Roger Goodell only answers to 32 billionaires, college football answers to all kinds of entities, including governors in various states, some open, some not. So that's really the problem.
I understand that. Now, very quickly, I'd like to ask you, because there's obviously a huge difference between the NFL and college football, and that is the difference in the status of the people who are actually playing the game. Doesn't that need to be considered? Like, I understand why there would be differences here, because you're dealing with student athletes, Paul. That does have to be handled differently, doesn't it?
It should be considered. I'm not sure it is to the nth degree right now, Greeny. So many people are just saying, we're going to open, we're going to do this. I'm not sure they really have a plan yet. And I talked to somebody yesterday who said college football is too big to fail. What does that mean? That means that they are going to play football and then figure it out as they go along. And I'm not really sure they have a good plan. The president at West Virginia the other day, Gordon Gee, who used to be at Ohio State and Vanderbilt, and he's 76 years old, he said, we are going to play football this fall, even if I have to suit up. Yeah, he added later, we'll make sure the safety procedures are in place, but it was later, not earlier.
Yeah, that's a telling there. Too big to fail is obviously an expression that we use for huge corporations, huge businesses that generate billions of dollars, sort of like college football. So that's what they're saying in the SEC and the ACC. Bobby, what are you hearing in Big Ten country?
I think it's a lot of the same thing, Mike. When you look at this, you know, the reason why they had confidence coming out of it is you're talking the most powerful man in football in Roger Goodell, and he has a plan. And so, like Paul was saying, all these leagues, all the conferences are all over the place. They don't have a unified message. Going now to talk to Roger Goodell, one of the things that he's going to be able to give them is understanding. He's going to be able to help them with a plan. And if you look at the NFL and college football, they've been in lockstep here for not just the last couple months, but really the last 30 years, going back to the fact that, hey, you have to stay in college for 3 years before you go to the NFL. The NFL loves that. Why? Because they have ready-made stars. The NFL wants the college season to go on this season so they can continue to have those ready-made stars. The Joe Burrows, the Chase Youngs, the Isaiah Simmons. If we don't have college football this year, the draft isn't as popular because you don't know who those guys are. They aren't a mainstay in your house. So I think Roger Goodell and the NFL are doing everything they can to make sure that they have their weekend buddy playing on Saturdays with them to help promote the game.
Now, it's remarkable. We've been sitting around for the last couple of weeks figuring out who could be in charge of college football. I never would have thought Roger Goodell would be the answer, but maybe he is. Now, Laura, we're going to have Lincoln Riley in an hour. He's going to join us live, the coach of Oklahoma. And this should be interesting because I want you to hear some of what he said yesterday, because while the SEC is going to be voting next week on whether to open their athletic facilities in June, Riley cautioned everyone about doing this too early. Here's what he said.
All this talk of these schools wanting to bring players back on June 1st is one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard. And so we got to be patient. We'll get one good shot at it to bring them back at the right time when we're as prepared and know as much about this as we possibly can. And but I do believe if we do it right and we don't get ahead of ourselves, that we will be able to play a season.
All right. So that's quite different. Laura, what does he mean when he says we get one good shot at this?
Well, look, for every positive and for every optimistic view, you find an equally maybe realistic or some people might say pessimistic view about starting college football in the fall or starting it on time and then bringing players back June 1st. There are so many differing opinions, and that's what makes this so complicated. And what Lincoln Riley's referring to is that it really probably would be catastrophic to have to start a season and then stop the season, because who knows how you would pick it back up and carry on. And what Lincoln Riley wants, and we'll be able to talk to him, as you mentioned, Greeny, is just to get a full season or as full of a season in as possible, because that's the best thing for everybody involved. It's probably the best from the safety standpoint. It's probably the best for the university standpoint, because as we've told you many times before, just in the 50 plus public universities in Power 5 conferences, we're talking about $4 billion that's at stake here. They're trying to make sure that they can gain as much profit as possible and keep everybody as safe as possible. So Lincoln Riley is probably looking at it from that standpoint. And there are many others like him. For, like I said, all the coaches and athletic directors and commissioners saying, hey, we want this to happen June 1st. We want to bring these guys back. And I actually think that will happen in the SEC. There's an equal amount of people that say this may be a little bit too soon.
Paul, what do you think?
Well, I think he's right about one thing. If college football comes back, or this goes for any sport, comes back too quickly and is not prepared, it is going to be catastrophic. Remember the NCAA basketball tournament, Greeny. On Tuesday, we were debating fans. On Wednesday, we said, well, we'll put more hand sanitizer out. By Thursday, there was no sports. That's how convoluted the thinking was back then. And I really agree with him, because people need to be very, very careful. This goes for the entire country. If you rush back and you're not prepared, it sets everyone back weeks, if not months.
Bobby, what do you think? Because I did think to myself that if the players are all in one place where people who have their best interests at heart are in charge, maybe that in and of itself isn't a bad thing. What do you think?
That's the thing. They've been going through these protocols and different things at, you know, Ohio State and many of the other schools throughout the country, because the reality is now for the rest of the school year, most of these football players, they're essentially going to be the guinea pigs, the test subjects. They're going to be on probation. The athletic departments, the coaches have really had to ask the universities, hey, can you open this up on a smaller scale for these players? And hopefully as we move forward, we can find a way to manage this and have good protocols in place that'll serve as the policy that they'll move forward with in the fall for however they're going to operate. So there is so much emphasis on them getting it right this first time, because if they have a setback, it's not only going to affect football, it'll affect other sports and probably the universities at large as well.
Yes, so long as the safety and health of the student athletes is placed first, then I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with that. All right, much more on this as we go, guys, including Lincoln Riley live an hour from now. But we have much more to do this morning as well. Coming up next, did you hear what Bryce Harper said? He weighed in on baseball resuming and not getting a full paycheck for the players. You'll hear what he said, and you'll find out why you need to be paying close attention coming up. And then you've got to hear this. What Steelers legend James Harrison revealed yesterday about his former coach that has another coach furious. All that and more on the way. We get up with you on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Get Up is brought to you by Burger King. The 3-for-$3 deal is now at Burger King. And by Gillette, the best a man can get. All right, Major League Baseball is continuing negotiations with its players union as the two sides try to work out a deal to start this 2020 season. The commissioner, Rob Manfred, was on CNN last night and expressed optimism about reaching an agreement.
I think that whenever there's a discussion about economics, publicly people tend to characterize it as a fight. Me personally, I have great confidence that we'll reach an agreement with the Players Association, both that it's safe to come back to work and work out the economic issues that need to be resolved. At the end of the day, however, if there's, you know, players with either health conditions or just their own personal doubts, we would never force them or try to force them to come back to work. They can wait until they feel they're ready to come.
It's been a very interesting week in baseball. Here they are, Jeff Passan, our insider, and, of course, Mark DeShara. Jeff, I'll start with you. What can we learn about baseball's plans after what Manfred said yesterday?
Well, Greeny, we've been hearing a lot around all sports, not just baseball, about testing, how it is going to be the key to everything coming back. And we finally got a sense of what testing is going to look like in Major League Baseball from Rob Manfred last night. He talked about having multiple tests per week that are going to be sent out to a lab in Utah that Major League Baseball helped pay to retrofit to change it from a drug testing lab to a COVID testing lab. He also talked about point of contact testing. It's another way of saying rapid testing, where if somebody shows symptoms at the ballpark, when they get screened, they will have a rapid test right there that can be done somewhere in the range of 5 to 15 minutes. The point is, the players now have a sense of what testing is going to be like and can come back to to MLB and say to them, this is sufficient or this is what we need.
Tex, what is your sense of that? We'll get to the money piece of it in a minute, but what is your sense, having heard what you've heard, if you were a player, would you feel good taking the field under these conditions?
I would, and the reason is Major League Baseball and the players, they're both aligned here from a safety standpoint. They can fight about the economics, but when it comes to keeping the players and the staff safe, there's no disagreement here. And I do believe that Major League Baseball is doing everything possible to make sure players are safe, but also staff as well. We saw Art Howe this morning. You know, he's in the ICU, 73 years old, one of the most beloved men in all of baseball. Nobody wants a disaster to happen. Nobody wants bad things to happen to either the players or the staff.
Okay, fair enough. So the safety and health of everyone involved is paramount, period. New paragraph. We get to the money part of this because that also does always seem to create issues. Blake Snell, very well-known, outstanding pitcher, had some interesting comments on where he stands on the idea of coming back and playing at a reduced rate. In case you haven't heard, here's what he said.
Y'all got to understand, too, because y'all going to be like, bro, Blake, play for the love of the game, man. What's wrong with you, bro? Money should not be a thing. Bro, I'm risking my life. What do you mean it should not be a thing? It 100% should be a thing. If I'm going to play, I should be getting the money I signed to be getting paid. I got to get my money. I'm not playing unless I get mine, okay? And that's just the way it is for me.
They ain't lying. He's right. Hey, bro, he's speaking the truth, bro. I ain't mad at him. Somebody's got to say it. At least he manned up and said it. Good for him. I love Snow, man. He has a beast, too.
All right, so there's Bryce Harper, the biggest star in the sport, backing up Blake Snell, who is a very good pitcher. Jeff, I understand you've spoken to Snell. What can you tell us about that?
I did, and Bryce Harper, Greeny, is not the only one who is backing up Blake Snell. I think we have to cut through sometimes the tone or the way that somebody sounds and get to the heart of the message. And what Blake Snell really was trying to say was, hey, I have been playing baseball my whole life with this moment in mind. I have given my blood, I have given my sweat, I have given my tears. And what I want in return is the respect that for what I'm doing going out there in this moment where it isn't as safe as anyone would like it to be, where it is a little scary, that they're not going to come to us as players and say, hey, you know what? To add insult to injury, let's cut your pay just a little bit too because we need to get ours. And listen, I understand that perspective. I understand why people went after Blake Snell the way that they did. But that being said, I think we have to look at the player's perspective and understand that not only is it very real and are their feelings understandable in this situation, they are widespread. And I think players, not just Bryce Harper, back up what Blake Snell said and respect the fact that he was the one who actually went out there and said it.
Tex, what'd you think of it?
Well, I think Jeff's right. Players are going to stick together on this issue. There's no doubt. They want to make sure they're safe and they want to make sure that their economic interests are preserved here. And so, you know, players have every right to not play or every right to strike. Owners also have the right to lock out the players if they can't come to agreement. Nobody wants that to happen. So I think the players have drawn their line in the sand. Blake Snell speaks for a lot of guys out there. Maybe other guys would say it a little more lightly, but listen, you got to respect Blake Snell for saying what he said. Whether you agree with it or not, I think the fans ultimately are going to make the decision because they want to see baseball.
Yeah. Look, I'll just say again what I said to you guys the other day. If this thing doesn't happen because of money, and I'm not necessarily choosing a side here, if this thing doesn't happen because of money in the middle of a pandemic, at a point in time when we have unemployment levels in this country that are equivalent to those that we suffered in the Great Depression, baseball will lose fans that it will never get back, and it will richly deserve it. Jeff, the people you talk to, do you get a sense they understand that? Do they understand the gravity of at least what I predict would be unprecedented anger aimed in their direction from just the general population if this thing blows up over money?
Yeah, I think they do get it, Greeny. And remember, earlier this week, I said, this is going to be an ugly week. This is part of the ugliness, because at the beginning, when you have the sides staking out their territory, they're going to adopt extreme positions. They're going to do that knowing that eventually they have to come together. And everyone, I mean everyone, Greeny, with whom I've spoken, sees some of this ugliness that's going on and sees the rhetoric and believes that in the end, the finances are not going to be the thing that makes this fall apart. What would make it fall apart is the health and safety aspect. And as we saw from Rob Manfred yesterday, that's starting to be put on the table. As the MLBPA learns more about this in the coming days, they will be able to go back to MLB and say to them, this is what we need to feel safe out there and get at least this part of it dealt with.
All right. We'll see what happens. Let's see what develops over the weekend. Guys, thank you both very much. It's great to see you. Enjoy the weekend. By the way, we're going to be very busy all day long here on ESPN. After we wrap up this morning, it's time for First Take. That's followed by SportsCenter, NFL Live, and The Jump. At 4 o'clock, Jalen and Jacoby, highly questionable and around the horn. UFC Live coming your way at 5 to get you set for another fight night in Jacksonville tomorrow. Then SportsCenter comes your way at 6 with the PTI guys joining at 6:30. And cap it off with SportsCenter with Butchie and Eves at 10:45 Eastern. A jam-packed day here on ESPN. Meanwhile, coming up next, Sean Payton lost a year over a scandal. You'll hear why what a former Steeler said about Mike Tomlin yesterday had Payton going off. That's next. Get up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the Geico Giveback, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
We are back on Get Up with an explosive story from the NFL. Former Steeler linebacker James Harrison told Barstool Sports' Going Deep podcast that his former coach, Mike Tomlin, quote, gave him an envelope after his huge hit on the Browns' Muhammad Massaqua in 2010. Harrison was initially fined $75,000 for that hit. Massaqua got a concussion. The NFL later reduced the fine to $50,000. The NFL declined to comment on Harrison's claim yesterday, but the Steelers president released a statement saying, quote, I am very certain nothing like this ever happened. I have no idea why James would make a comment like this, but there is simply no basis for believing anything like it. Meanwhile, New Orleans Saints head coach Sean Payton, who was suspended for the entire 2012 season as a result of the Bountygate scandal, had a very strong reaction.
If people are waiting for the league to investigate that, they shouldn't hold their breath. I think, you know, what took place with us back in 2011 in so many ways was a sham. And yet there wasn't a lot we could do with it. You know, the players were vindicated, but from a league or a coaching standpoint, there's no union, there's no representation. But I would be shocked if that'll be something that's tucked away or under the rug at Park Avenue. They'll look into it briefly. Listen, don't get me started on that.
We're going to get you back in the doghouse, Coach.
In salary. You know, honestly, something I'll never truly get over, because I know how it was handled and how it was run and the reasons behind it. And that's just the truth.
Well, those are about the strongest comments we've heard from Sean Payton on this subject, at least in quite some time. And my football crew is ready to go. Lewis Riddick, Mike Tannenbaum, and Bobby back with us as well. Lewis, let's just start with the basics here. When we hear James Harrison say that Mike Tomlin, quote, gave him an envelope, what do you interpret that to mean?
Well, I think, you know, I interpret it to mean exactly what people are right now suggesting, which is that, you know, was there some kind of bounty put on certain individual players or just overall for the defense in that particular game? Were there bounties that were being offered up for big hits, knocking people out of the game, et cetera, that you've heard about in the past, especially back in the time when I played? Look, I thought a lot about this this entire issue. And I think there's two separate things here that people that are kind of happening right here. Look, back in the 90s, in the 2000s, the early 2000s, look, that's the way the game was played that way. Right or wrong, that's the way the game was played. I played the game that way in the 90s, and I saw hits that were much more vicious than that. And they were things that were accepted. They were things that were kind of accepted as part of the game. The league accepted it as part of the game. As a matter of fact, I grew up watching big hit videos that were put out by the league, and that's how the league sold the physicality of the game. Now, obviously, it has changed in recent years, and I understand why that is, too, in the name of, you know, protecting players and making sure that they are taken care of long term. But to then suggest, you know, and take it a step further, that there are coaches that are promoting physical violence in terms of injuring players and knocking them out of the game, knocking them out of football games and endangering their livelihood, you know, that's a huge, huge leap. And I understand what Sean Payton is saying here, because I've never been around a coach who has actually said, look, I will pay you money to knock someone out of the game and injure them. I have never been around a coach, and I played for some of the very best coaches to ever coach this game. So for James Harrison to even, you know, put it out there that he was given an envelope, you know, that's a huge leap, and that obviously is going to invite a lot of speculation and a lot of talk, just like we're having right now, as to what was Mike Tomlin doing as far as being the head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers back there in 2010 in that football game. And now this is something that's going to get a lot of attention. And look, I mean, I understand where Sean's coming from. I don't know what the league is going to do about it, but I can tell you this: in my time, again, playing with some of the vicious hitters that this game has ever seen, I've never been coached to do that, to actually take a player out. So this is one of those slippery slope type of subjects. So you have to be very careful once you start going down this rabbit hole.
Bobby, you played linebacker and you're a little younger, so you played in the league a little bit later. So when you hear about this kind of stuff, how prevalent was this in the culture of football when you were playing?
More prevalent, Greeny, earlier on in my career, not as much late. In the end of my career was right after the Bounty Gate situation, so coaches had backed off, but you know, it was commonplace earlier in my career with some of the older coaches, like Lewis had talked about, some of these guys who'd been in the game from the 80s and 90s, to not promote knocking guys out of the game, but hey, they're paying for sacks on certain down and distances. They're gonna take care of your fines, because they started finding guys like, play aggressive, the fines are mine, we got them in-house. And so those things happen, but it was never a point to promote someone getting knocked out of the game. And then I think you saw, probably towards the end of my career, right after the Bounty Gate stuff, that talk really subsided, because Sean Payton alluded to, he lost $6 million. Like, these coaches make good money, but none of those guys wanted to get suspended and lose their livelihood. And frankly, you know, it's tough to maybe get back into coaching once you were labeled with that. So I think the fear that was struck in them kind of eliminated that from the league.
All right, Mike T. So let's look at where we are here. James Harrison made what I guess can be described as an accusation. The Steelers president strongly denies it. There'll have to be some looking into it that goes on. What do you expect to happen here, and how should this be handled?
Yeah, Greeny, I agree with what Lewis and Bobby said, which is these sort of actions took place a generation ago. And obviously the conversation now is much more about player health and safety. The league will look into this, because these accusations are so serious. How far and how deep they go, I think what the Steeler president, Mr. Rooney, said may hopefully minimize or eliminate a full-fledged investigation, which I'm sure nobody wants at this point. So it's interesting to hear Sean Payton, though, because obviously there's a lot of scar tissue that here we are 14 years later, he's still, you know, dealing with. So I think the league will look into it. My sense is they don't want to dig up anything either. What may have happened over a decade ago, I'm sure they wanted to die quickly. So I don't think a lot will come out of this. And again, I think more importantly, moving forward, I think the league has done a great job of changing the dialogue to be more about player health and safety. And what happened was well over a generation ago.
So Lewis, give us a final thought here on this, as far as that maybe the league, they're going to have to do something, right? They're going to have to look at least ask Mike Tomlin. Someone will have to ask Mike Tomlin what that was about.
Sure.
And maybe Harrison, they'll come back to it again. Where does it go? If it does, because, see, it's interesting. The first interpretation I had when I heard the words, give me an envelope, were that he had paid the fine, the money that he had been fined. It didn't occur to me until I heard some other people saying it that maybe what it was actually doing was a bounty. So it feels to me there's not even clarity there. So I think there are some other questions that have to be answered before this thing can be put away.
Exactly, Greeny. I think that what he said could be interpreted in many different ways. But I think naturally everyone's inclination is to go, well, was Mike Tomlin offering up bounties for knocking players out of the game? I mean, that is a reckless leap to make. But I understand that that's where people's minds go. And that's where Sean's mind was going, because that's what is in our mind right now as far as big hits like that. When people say, look, coaches were giving players money for that kind of play, people automatically equate it to bounties. People automatically equate it to trying to injure guys and knock them out of the game. And that's not really, look, again, I have to emphasize this. In my time, that's not what was going on. Look, as Bobby alluded to, there were, you know, people would give you, you know, there would be money put into a pot for big hits and for tackles inside the 20 on special teams on kickoff and for interceptions and big sacks, especially in crucial situations. I mean, those kind of things happen. There's no question about that. And that, but that was much different than what people are suggesting as far as bounties is concerned, when you're literally trying to hurt people. And I think what kind of gets confused here and what kind of gets blurred here is, look, the game used to be played much differently than it is now. And that's just the way it is. And I'll tell you what, I make no, you know, I have no qualms about that. I have no excuses or really have, I'm not sorry for that. I played the game at that point in time where it was played that way and wouldn't change anything as far as how I was brought up playing the game. But it has changed. And for the better, people are trying to protect one another much more now. And it is very reckless when you automatically jump to the conclusion that a coach was promoting injuring someone. So I think the league will look into it. I think Mike Tomlin will vigorously, obviously, defend himself. And we'll move on from it, as Mike suggested. Yeah, Mike Tannenbaum.
James Harrison really opened up a can of worms. Really quickly, Mike T, what role does the front office play in this sort of thing? Are these conversations you have with coaches? What are you doing as a general manager relative to this?
No question. You want to find out the truth. You're going to talk to Coach Tomlin, get his side of the story. You're going to deal with the league. And again, in a situation like this, Greeny, you want to deal with the accusation head on, and you want to put it to bed quickly. And you're going to hear from the league probably within 24 to 48 hours. And you're going to tell the league what happened, Coach Tomlin's side of the story, and you hope it goes away, because no one benefits from this story lingering.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The priority they have placed on player safety, I think they have to act on this in some way and quickly. And we'll obviously have to hear from Mike Tomlin and maybe some clarification from James Harrison. Guys, stay with me. Much more football as we go. But we turn our attention now to this coming Sunday night. The Last Dance, brought to you by Reese's, as we will watch the closing of our 10-part documentary. Episodes 9 and 10 are coming your way on Sunday night. Right now, we wanted to put together a look at Michael Jordan as a finisher from his career and ask the question, was he the greatest closer ever? Jordan's final shot with the Bulls clinched his sixth and final championship, further cementing his legacy as the NBA's best closer ever. Let's go beyond the perfect 6-0 record in the finals and the six finals MVPs, and even the fact that he never went to a game 7 in the finals. He closed all games with an NBA record 9 game-winning buzzer beaters in his regular season and postseason career. The most iconic, of course, the shot over Craig Elo.
The Bulls win it! They win it!
Set the Cleveland Cavaliers! Michael Jordan hits it at the foul line!
He closed playoff games. He shot 9 of 18 on game-tying or go-ahead attempts in the final 24 seconds of his playoff career. His closest contemporaries, Kobe Bryant, shot 25%. LeBron James has shot 37%. Michael Jordan closed series. He had the highest scoring average in league history in potential series clinchers, over 34 points a game. And he always had the last word. He made or assisted on an incredible 5 go-ahead shots in the final 10 seconds of series clinchers. And with his shot over Brian Russell in 1998, plus his assist to Steve Kerr's finals clincher in 1997, Jordan was directly involved in the last 2 series clinchers in finals history. And he appeared to have the ultimate mic drop until he came out of retirement. He scored 45 points in game 6 of the 98 finals. That's the second most in a finals clincher ever, behind 50 by Hall of Famer Bob Pettit all the way back in 1958. So in every sense, he forever ended at least one debate. Who would you most want to have the ball at the end of the game? That one's easy. He's the closer, and the closing of The Last Dance is coming your way on Sunday night. Do not miss the final two episodes starting 9 o'clock Eastern, the uncensored versions on ESPN and the ESPN app. And there's an edited for mature language version on ESPN2. And again, we'll be doing a 3-hour Get Up special on Monday morning looking back on the final episodes. All right, coming up, another guy who's got 6 rings, Tom Brady. So what has to happen for Tom to make it lucky number 7 in Tampa? We'll tell you that next. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
We are back on Get Up with the answer to the following question. Is there any chance Tom Brady will ever be remembered as anything other than a New England Patriot? And what might surprise you, the answer is actually yes. And history tells us how. Tom Brady seemed certain to wind up like Derek Jeter, 20 seasons, one team.
I've had the greatest job in the world, shortstop for the New York Yankees.
Or Kobe Bryant.
To spend 20 years here, I mean, you can't write something better than this.
Or Dirk Nowitzki or Cal Ripken. Instead, the more apt comparisons now figure to be Joe Montana, his childhood idol, Brett Favre, Peyton Manning, and Michael Jordan. Awfully fancy company to keep, and here's why. Montana played his final two seasons with the Chiefs and played well. Went 17-8, made the AFC Championship game, but he didn't win it, and his old team won the Super Bowl with his replacement Steve Young in what proved to be Montana's final season. Thus, not even in Kansas City is he remembered as a Chief. Favre played 3 seasons after leaving the Packers and also played well. Much better in 1 year with the Jets than is usually remembered, and then an MVP caliber season in Minnesota in 2009. Trouble is, that season ended with this terrible interception in the NFC title game.
Why do you even ponder passing? I mean, you can take a knee.
And his final season was an injury-plagued mess. He'll forever be a Packer. Jordan came back after 3 years of retirement to play for the Wizards and put up pretty good numbers considering. He played all 82 games his final season and became the only player ever to score 40 in a game at the age of 40. But his team didn't make the playoffs either year. Michael will forever be a Bull. That leaves Manning, Brady's arch rival and good friend, who had by far the most success in his second act. 4 seasons in Denver, MVP of the league in 2013, throwing 55 touchdowns, and then capping it with a Super Bowl win in his final NFL game. That is the ticket. On his bust in Canton, there will be room for a little orange around the horseshoe. And thus, the marching orders for Brady are simple. If you think Tampa Tom has a nice ring to it, you're going to have to win a ring for anyone to remember. So, it's easy to say. It's obviously a lot less easy to do. Bobby and Lewis are back, and Field Yates joins the conversation as well. Good morning, Field. But, Lewis, I'll start with you. What has to go right? What has to happen for Brady to win a championship in Tampa?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, Greeny, Tampa Bay has to protect him and not just keep him from getting sacked. They have to keep him from getting pressured. Like when you look at his 2019 season, Tom only completed 32% of his passes when he was being pressured, which really throws him off. And they can't have him get, you know, just completing 32%. That's not going to be how he is going to excel. They need to go ahead and make sure from inside out, from center to guard in particular, he stays protected and he stays clean in the pocket so they can exploit the middle of the field with the tight ends that they have and the way they are set up offensively. Look, they have 3 tight ends that are very good. Obviously, Rob Gronkowski is going to go to the Hall of Fame. Cam Brayton and O.J. Howard, who are already on the roster, are 2 very good young tight ends. So they need to keep Tom comfortable. The running game has to improve, and so he can then be at his maximum efficiency. If they don't do that, if you see Tom getting pressured at the same rate he was being pressured in New England, it's going to fall apart for them offensively. And just remember this now. They're going to have to do all this without having any kind of offseason, and he's going to have to get on the same page with this offense and on the same page with Bruce Arians very quickly once organized team activities start up again. So there's a lot on his plate. And I wouldn't be, I would caution us all to temper expectations for the Tampa Bay Bucs for sure.
Yeah. And of course, he's older than any of the guys that we talked about in that piece at this particular time. He'll be 43 years old when the season begins. So, Field, what do the numbers suggest about how long a window we're talking about here? I mean, what has the decline really been in your mind? And so are we looking at 1 year, 2 years? Could it be more than that for Brady's window to try and win this championship in Tampa?
Well, Greeny, he has been very public with his desire to play until the age of 45, which would mean three more seasons if he plays through that age 45 season. The contract right now with Tampa Bay was a two-year deal. But remember, at the end of that deal, there was a provision that prevented the Buccaneers from using a franchise tag on Tom Brady after these two seasons, which would indicate, at least to me, that there is interest in fulfilling that stated goal of playing to the age of 45. In terms of the reality of that, Greeny, I think what Lewis mentioned with the pressure is important, is that there might have been a time earlier on in his career where Tom Brady eluded pressure more succinctly and was able to fire away with even more duress upon him, but very few of the physical skills have truly waned from Tom Brady. So I think the idea of playing till 45, provided there are five layers of protection, is certainly within reach for Tom, and you know he's going to be incredibly motivated to continue to prove people wrong despite the fact that he has six rings.
How about the eye test, Bobby? Does he have enough left to carry a team to a championship?
I think he does. And going back and watching him play last season, 2 years ago, people say he doesn't push the ball down the field anymore. That's not really how their offense was set up. They were dinking and dunking. I remember a shot he threw to Cordell Patterson late in the season in 2018. He pushed the ball down the field. He throws a strike right down the middle, about 40 yards. And they're saying that his arm was gone. If you protect the guy, if you keep him healthy, he's going to be able to continue to do this and play at a high level. The reality is, as guys get older, they don't like to get hit. When you're 50, it feels a lot worse getting out of bed than it does when you're 20. And so that's the other piece. And then the last piece, and Lewis kind of alluded to it, you know, the emergence of the inside receiving weapons, whether that's a tight end or whether that's a slot receiver. You know, you look at what he did with Troy Brown, Danny Amendola, Wes Welker, and then you have the tight ends, Rob Gronkowski, Aaron Hernandez. I think O.J. Howard and the emergence of a slot weapon are going to be critical for this team for Tom if he's going to want to be able to make a deep playoff run.
Yeah, right now he's got three tight ends to work with there in Tampa. Meanwhile, Field, let me keep you here. Let's run the hurry up and go through some free agents that are still available and try and figure out where those guys are going to go. And let's start with Cam Newton, Field. What do you see as the right fit for him?
Well, Greeny, until yesterday, I would have said the Seattle Seahawks, but they brought back Geno Smith on a one-year deal, a familiar face for them. They seem to be going a different direction. So how about the Los Angeles Rams? Go find their quarterback depth chart behind Jared Goff. You're going to have a hard time. It is not a bunch of proven names. I think that Cam Newton with Sean McVay, the quarterback whisperer, an outstanding offensive mind, to me would make a lot of sense. So let's go to the defensive side of the ball now. And Jadeveon Clowney is perhaps the biggest name that has been a free agent since the start of free agency. Of course, Cam Newton was cut after the league year. Clowney, an impact defensive player, even if the sack number isn't robust each season. I think the Titans make a lot of sense. He played their head coach, Mike Vrabel, when Vrabel was on the defensive staff of the Houston Texans, a guy that can add some pass rush. They've already added Vic Beasley this offseason. Even more pass rush juice if Clowney went to Tennessee. And finally, I think the Tampa Bay Buccaneers still need to add a pass-catching running back who Tom Brady can implicitly trust. They have Ronald Jones. They drafted Keyshawn Vaughn. But Devontae Freeman from the Falcons would be a useful addition. He's an excellent runner, too. But if healthy, Devontae Freeman could solve what I think is still one small hole in this Buccaneers offense. He would be a lot of fun playing alongside Tom Brady.
All right, we will wait and see. Field Yates with us here talking football, and we will continue. We've got a huge hour coming your way, and college is where it will start. Coming up, he runs one of the best teams in college football. Lincoln Riley says we need to be especially careful right now, and he'll tell us why when he joins us live. Coming up in just a few minutes, right here, Get Up on ESPN.